In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 13 and 14, the Apostle Paul tells us to watch. Stand fast in the faith. Be brave. Be strong. Let all that you do be done with love. You know, this passage of Scripture gives us a wonderful opportunity to evaluate ourselves according to the Word of Jesus Christ. You know, sometimes, this is human nature, I guess, sometimes we tend to overvalue ourselves. We try to think of ourselves in ways that, well, maybe we bring ourselves some glory, maybe bring ourselves some special attention. And we do this around other people so that they will take note of us. You know, my daddy had an expression that he used when he saw people who really thought that they were just a little extra special. He would say, "I'd like to buy him for what he's worth and sell him for what he thought he was worth." He said, "I could quit my job." And he said that a whole lot. I don't know if he thought everybody was better than he was or not. I don't know, but I heard that quite a bit growing up as a child. You know, when we do something like this, when we basically overvalue ourselves, we need to look at ourselves and examine ourselves in a more objective way. We need to look at our obligations. We need to look at our goals. We need to look at the type of person we are. And maybe see ourselves in a more realistic way, so to speak. Today I want to talk about true evaluation of ourselves as Christians. And I want to use 1 Corinthians 16 as the verse by which we do that. Because I believe that there are five things that we can look and find in this verse, in 1 Corinthians 16, that will help us to evaluate ourselves in a better way. The first thing I would like for us to look at is to be watchful. I want you to listen to something the Apostle Paul said in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 6. He said, "Therefore let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober." You know, as Christians, we are to be wide awake to the things around us, to the ways of the world, so that we can avoid these things. You know, sinners are being represented in as people who basically are being asleep. You know, Peter tells us in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, he says, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour." You know, when I was in college, I went to the University of North Alabama in Florence, Alabama, and the mascot of our college was a lion. And we were the only college in America who had a live lion as a mascot, and as far as I know, they are still the only college in the United States that has a live lion as a mascot. His name was Leo, and he came to us as a 35-pound lion cub. He was just a cute little thing, not much bigger than a small dog. And he was our lion mascot. This is what he looked like when he grew up. He grew to a 600-pound lion. When he was on his hind feet, he stood almost 10 feet tall. He was probably as domesticated as you could domesticate a lion, because he was constantly with people. People was in and out with him from the time he was a small cub. He was still a lion, though. And he was tremendously dangerous. He was tremendously powerful. His front fangs, when he yawned, stretched almost 5 feet or 5 inches. His front fangs were 5 inches long, and a roar would make your heart stop. His toys were tractor tires, and he would shred them to pieces as if they were nothing. His diet consisted of 25 pounds of meat a day. Come mealtime, he would get restless. He would pace back and forth. He would growl. His tail would lash back and forth, knocking everything out of the way that was in his way. And his roar could be heard all over campus. When the trainer threw the food in to him, he had a platform that rose above the cage. When he threw the food in, Leo would catch it before it hit the ground, and it was gone in seconds. In 1977, the reigning Miss Alabama came to get her picture made with Leo. And like I say, he was usually gentle with people, and he was actually having a good day that day. When she got in the cage with him and she put her arm around him, something snapped. And that lion sent her flying across the cage through the air. He rose up to his feet and it looked like he was about to attack. And he was immediately bombarded with tranquilizers. Like I said, he was usually gentle, but he was still a lion. And he was deadly. This is the picture that Peter is trying to get you and I to understand about Satan. Satan is going to come to you, and he's going to look so sweet and so innocent and so kind, just like Leo did when he was laying in the sun in his cage. But he's still a lion. And Satan is still Satan. And he will attack. And he will destroy. You know, Jesus said to his apostles in the Garden of Gethsemane, "Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. For the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." So Jesus is telling his disciples, you need to watch. Why watch? Well, Ezekiel tells us in Ezekiel 18 and verse 4 that we watch because the soul who sins shall die. Apostle Paul tells us in Romans 6 verse 23 that we watch because the wages of sin is death. So yes, we do need to watch for the evil that is in this world today. That's part of our life as a Christian. But you know, it doesn't stop there. There is so much more for the Christian than simply watching for temptation and trying to stay out of trouble. The servant of God must do much more than just watch for evil. For example, how much would you pay an employee that worked for you if all he did was just simply stay out of trouble? Now, you know, you can ask some Christians about their lives and they'll tell you, well, I don't lie. I don't steal. I don't go out and get drunk. And I don't do all these things that is worldly, that the world seems to really enjoy. And they look at their Christianity as nothing more than the duty to stay out of trouble. And I have to tell you now, it's true. We need to stay out of trouble. That's part of our work as Christians. But then the good Christian servant must also look for opportunities to do good. What blessing, my friends, are we to the Lord? Are we blessing Him if we just simply stay out of trouble? Well, that's not all the blessings that we can give Him. Have you ever been standing around in a funeral home and the place is crowded and everybody's talking about the person who is deceased, and you listen to the conversation and it goes something like this: "Oh, he was such a good person. You know, he didn't smoke. He didn't drink. I never heard him say any dirty words. He was such a good person." And everything hinges on what he didn't do. But then you have to ask yourself, what did he do? Did he ever show kindness? Did he ever help anyone in distress? Did he ever talk about Jesus or the gospel of Christ or mention to anyone about being a Christian? You see, that's just as important as not doing the negative things in life. The Lord wants workers in His vineyard. You know, as Paul labels it in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 58, we need to always be abounding in the work of the Lord. And if we don't watch for good opportunities, we probably won't see them when they're right in front of our eyes. We're sort of like the two farmers. They were arguing back and forth about which one had the most rats in his barn. Each one declared that he had more rats than the other. I don't know if you've ever been in a barn. I've never seen a barn that didn't have rats. My granddaddy had rats in his barn, especially in his corn crib. And I didn't know this at the time. I was just a young boy, maybe 10 or 11 years old. He kept a snake in his corn crib. It was a garter snake, I guess is what it was. They're harmless to people, but they kill rats. And he kept one in his corn crib. And I go out there one day, and I'm just playing around in his barn, and all of a sudden I was looking in the corn crib, and there that head popped up. And let me tell you, from that day on, that snake kept this big rat out of that corn crib. These two farmers were arguing about who had the most rats. So they agreed they were going to find out. So one farmer took a pole, and he rattled it under the crib of his corn there in his barn. And the other farmer, he got around the corner, and he was going to watch and count how many rats come scampering out when he mixed up the corn crib and disrupted the rats. And the rats, they came running out. The farmer said, "Well, yeah, you've got a good many rats, but I still have more rats than you do. All right, well, let's go to your farm." So they go to the other man's barn, and he gets around the corner, and the man, he gets his pole, the farmer, he gets his pole, and he stirs up his corn crib, and rats just go everywhere. And he's yelling out, "You see them? Do you see them?" And the other farmer says, "No, I don't see anything. I don't see no rats." So the farmer drops his pole, he walks around the corner, and there's the other farmer. He didn't see any rats, did he? He didn't want to see any rats. He wanted to win the competition. Sometimes, my friends, we have opportunities that we deliberately don't see. And part of the Christian life is to take advantage of the opportunities that we have to serve God. And while we're doing all of this, we have to be watchful. I fear that some of our deepest regrets will be the fact that we have neglected opportunities. Our second duty is to stand fast. This means to stand under the banner of Christ. It means that we don't get under it and get our picture took and then we run out from under it. It doesn't mean that we come in as hot and on fire and then we get cold and we do nothing. It means that we stand under that banner of Christ and we stay there and we work and we serve and we stand in faith. It means that you will be committed to Christ. It means that you will be committed to the congregation that you are a part of. It means that you will be involved with the work. It means that you will support the leadership. It means that you will be a dependable servant of God. You are going to stand there. You are going to stay there. You are going to plant yourself there, and you are going to be there. You know, you can take the finest fruit tree that you can pick up at the nursery, and you can bring it home and you can prepare the most fertile soil that you know how to make you can fertilize it and you can put the best topsoil in and you can plant that tree and it's standing so firm and so strong and it's taking in all of those nutrients and you can leave it there for 1 month. And then you can pull it out of that place and you can put it somewhere else. And you can do the same thing in this place. And it's going to stand there, and it's going to take in all of those nutrients, and then you can rip it up, and you can take it and put it in the third place. Now, you can keep that tree alive as you go from place to place to place, but I'm going to tell you, friends, that tree will never bear fruit. Because for a tree to bear fruit, it has to take root. It has to stay in one place. It has to become strong. It has to become vibrant. And you can't do that from moving around all the time. And eventually, a tree that is uprooted will die. And my friends, eventually, a Christian who will not take root will die. You know, some Christians are like social butterflies. They seldom light. They'll flutter around. You ever watched a butterfly? They'll flutter around. If they light, they'll light for a few seconds and then they're gone again. And then some Christians are like buzzards. Buzzards will light where the food is. And when the food is gone, they take off. They get what they can and then they leave. You'd be amazed how many people do the same thing with the church. You get what you can out of it and then you move on. But you know, in the work of the church, if we want to succeed, we're going to stand fast. We're going to stay in one place. And we're going to work and be strong. Our third duty is to be brave. You know, there are few qualities in manliness more admired than bravery. Whether on the battlefield or on the job, courage to face difficulties in life and deal with them is referred to being a man, the measure of a man. You know, the work and the harmony of the church is often disrupted by people who are old enough to be men, and I'm using that word in general terms. I'm talking about women as well. And they can handle themselves, but they still act like immature children who simply want to get their way. They're more interested in being popular than being right. They would rather ignore a difficult situation than face it and deal with it. You know, my friends, God sometimes gives us difficult work. I never will forget the preacher that baptized me and married Pat and I, his name was Charles Kretzer. He left our congregation and went to a little church in Rogersville, a little church who had just split down the middle over some foolish reason. And he was invited to go to that church and work with that church, and his job was to try to get the ones who had left back. And he told me, he said, "Farron, I was scared to death." He said, "I was walking into a time bomb. It had already exploded once, and it was about to explode again. And one by one, family by family, Charles brought every family back to that church except one man. And the only reason that one man wouldn't come back is because the church would not agree that the only Bible that we should read is King James Bible. And he would not come back for that. But that man sweated, I guess, 2 years or longer to bring that church back together. I got to tell you, my friends,
that was bravery in my eyes, to take on a task like that to begin with when he really didn't have to do it. But he did it.
Sometimes we need to listen to what the Bible tells us. In our text, it says, be brave. You turn over to the King James and it will say, quit you like men. And that simply means be brave. Or behave like men. You know, Jesus revealed through John in Revelation 21 and verse 8, fearful are going to be those who find their place in the lake of fire. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexual immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. My friends, as children of God, we must be brave. Number four, we need to be strong. Paul tells us in three different places in Galatians chapter 6 that we will face heavy burdens. We will bear heavy burdens. Not only will we bear them ourselves, but others will bear them. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2, Paul tells us that we need to bear one another's burdens, for this is the law of Christ. He tells us in verse 5, let each one shall bear his own burden. And then in verse 10, he says, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially of those who are the household of faith. That means, my friends, we're going to have to work. We're going to have to be strong. If we have to bear our burdens, there is strength involved in that. If we have to help other people with their burdens, there is strength involved in that. And if we are going to do good for everyone, there has got to be strength involved in that. As Christians, we must be strong. Listen to what Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8. He's basically telling us we can be strong. For bodily exercise profits a little, but godliness is profitable for all things, having the promise of life that now is and that of which is to come. The fact is, my friends, if we keep ourselves in God's service, if we keep our life pure, our life will be much stronger than those who have buried their lives in other things. We must be strong. In God's strength, there is no end to what we can do. And then fifth, let all that you do be done with love. Love is the greatest characteristic of a Christian. John 13, verse 35, by this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. I do hope that within the realm of this room, there is love for one another. I hope there is compassion for one another. I hope there is strength to help one another as we go through our burdens of life. Paul bears out very well the importance of love in 1 Corinthians 13. He says, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I have become sounding brass, or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all of my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profits me nothing. Now, Paul is telling us, I can live my life being watchful. I can live my life standing in what I think is my faith. I can be brave. I can be strong. But if I don't have the love of God, these other things are useless. Paul has just said that. If even though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, if I don't have love, I am nothing. Even though I can prophesy, even though I can understand all things, even though I know the knowledge of all mysteries, if I don't have love, I don't have anything. And even though I give everything that I have to the poor, and I help everybody in every way that I can, if I don't have love, it is useless. Go to Matthew chapter 25, when Jesus is telling them, or the people look at Jesus and they say, look, did we not prophesy in your name? Did we not cast out demons in your name? Did we not do all these wondrous works in your name? But they didn't have the love. They wasn't doing it for God. They was doing it for themselves. And he said, I never knew you. The love, my friend, has to be there. It is the most important, Paul said, of all of the things. So this morning, our duty is clear. These things will help us be what God wants us to be. We do need to be watchful. We do need to stand fast in our faith. We do need to be brave. We do need to be strong. And we do need to do everything in love. Love for God. And if you do these things, you do well. You know, when you look at this list, these are things that should be pretty simple to understand, shouldn't it? And we probably all in this room understand these things. Understanding them is one thing. Doing them is something else. Doing them can be difficult. But yet, they must be done. This morning, my friends, as a Christian, you need to ask yourself this question. Have I failed in my duties to the Lord? Have I let my guard down? Have I become basically a coward with my Christianity? Have I let my fellow Christian down without offering to them the things that they need? If so, my friends, you need to repent of that today. Make your life right today. And start again. And these five things that I've talked about will help you with your Christianity. It will help you with your salvation. Because it will put within you the things that you need to grow as a child of God. And this morning, if you are not a Christian, I have to tell you, you really can't put these Christian values within you until you put on Christ. Oh, yeah, we can be brave. We can be strong. That's about it. We don't have really anything to stand for, do we? We don't have anything to watch out for because we're not enemies with the devil. I do hope, my friends, that you are an enemy of the devil. That's one of the things we watch out for him because he is our enemy. He is the father of everything wrong in our lives, and we need to know that. So today, my friend, if you are not a Christian, you need to put on Christ. You need to make him your enemy, and you need to put these things into your life. You need to be watchful. You can stand in faith once you get faith, and you can be brave, and you can be strong, and you can show love for God and love for one another, but you have to put on Christ first, and we want to give you that opportunity today as well. If you need to respond to the invitation, please come while we stand and sing.